All right, 6 months after the disappearance of 84-year-old Nancy Guthrie from her Tucson area home, investigators remain no closer to finding her or those who are responsible. Surveillance video captured a masked man outside of the home before Guthrie vanished. This remains an enormous mystery. Lots has been written about this and so much has been reported. But at the six-month mark, it doesn't seem like we're any closer to knowing what happened to this 84-year-old woman. We wanted to get some insight into maybe this investigation, what's happening. From a law enforcement perspective, Sarah Krebs is a former Michigan State Police member, and she retired from the MSP. She was also associated with Missing in Michigan, the organization. Sarah likes to say she's a civilian now. Sarah, you're not a civilian. You're never a civilian.
I totally am now. I'm just a commoner. I retired in October, and yeah, it's kind of in the past, but if you know about being a cold case detective, you really never let go of your cases. So, of course, I'm very interested in the disappearance of Nancy, as the rest of the nation is.
Yeah, for sure. And you were beloved as someone who investigated these cases. The families who worked with you had nothing but the highest praise for you. And you worked for some big cases. But let's talk a little bit about Nancy Guthrie. So, sure. You know, we're looking at, look, we have the video case. We have the video in this case. There is some DNA that they were able to find. But why 6 months later? We're going to talk about the ransom notes in just a second. So put that aside for a second.
Sure.
Why do you think this has taken so long? Is it because, you know, there's a lot of speculation. Maybe law enforcement didn't handle this as well as they could have at the beginning. Maybe the media attention, maybe because of the celebrity Nancy Guthrie as the mother of Savannah Guthrie on the Today Show. Or was just this a mix of all of that that turned this into the case that it is today?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of the worst things happening. Like, not only was Nancy Guthrie an elderly woman, which I'll say in the law enforcement perspective, nobody would have guessed that this was an abduction case right off the bat. I thought the same, that, you know, at that age, this is it happens rather often that elderly people wander. With dementia and other issues, which it was ruled out that she was not a candidate for that, you know, after talking to the family. But I still don't think that law enforcement would have thought that this was going to be an abduction. I mean, it wasn't really until I heard that the surveillance measures in the home had been tampered with, you know, that the Ring doorbell was missing and that the back door was propped open. At that point, it became like, this is bigger than a missing persons case. This is probably some sort of homicide or abduction. But I don't really blame them in those first hours of investigating it as a disappearance of a 84-year-old woman.
Yeah, but there is this concern that they allowed people, they didn't secure the area, a perimeter around the home. And so, you know this. I'm just a journalist. I've been on crime scenes before. You know, you walk around and you start to disturb vital evidence.
Correct. Yeah. I would say that as soon as they made the phone call that, hey, we think we have an investigation that requires homicide to come out, that the scene would have been secured. And in that case, because it was inside and outside of the property, they really should have shut down that entire, maybe even neighborhood at that point. Mm-hmm. You know, but definitely the crime scene would have been the property that Nancy lived on. It should have been taped off immediately. And, you know, I think that they see their failures in that now, that a lot of the evidence is being questioned.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about the ransom notes, because they finally were released, so we got a good look at them in the last couple of days. I found them personally very fascinating. As someone who writes every single day for a living, I know that people write a certain way. It's very, you know, everybody's got their own quirks and so on. The way we speak, but also the way we write. So it tells us something about the way. So the first ransom note talks a little bit about how, you know, We have your mother, Nancy. She's safe but scared. She'll be held for ransom. And once that payment's received, she'll be released unharmed. We will be holding her for a maximum of 4 days. This goes on for a couple of paragraphs. They want $4 million. Okay, that was what they asked for. Not but a few days later, they get another ransom note. This one's much shorter. They get a note, I should say. We did not fully grasp the seriousness of her physical condition. We never intended to hurt her. That was not our intention. She perished shortly after she was taken. We believe it was heart-related. She is buried in nature now. First of all, I can't imagine the devastation of the family when they got that note.
For sure.
Right?
For sure.
Yeah. So what are these? You looked at both of these notes, and you read both of them all the way through. I'm just reading recaps here. What did you think when you read those?
Well, I think, first of all, like having a ransom note even included in the investigation changes the entire investigation. You know, it gives you other leads into how to look for these because they were digital. You know, that is offering law enforcement a new way to track these offenders. I know that they even got the FBI involved, which, of course, in a kidnapping case that they should be involved. And I think what is also good that ransom was requested was that it gives the investigators a little bit more knowledge about who the kidnappers are. They can read into those communications, and you can see that they're trying to control the behavior of the family and law enforcement in them. You know, they're giving them just enough information, but not the entire story. So they're still trying to be in control of it.
Yeah. Go ahead.
I just think that it made it so much harder on the family, though, that these were used and that, you know, the family had, they had to go through all of the emotional response to getting these. You know, I mean, I honestly have never had a case that had a real ransom request. We have cases in Michigan here where ransom notes are usually on social media, and they're usually fake. They're scammers trying to play upon the grief of that family that is missing somebody and trying to exploit them. And in this case, I'm sure that that was the first thought by law enforcement, but they determined that they were actual ransom requests, which changes, like I said, the whole nature of that investigation.
So we heard from Savannah Guthrie, because a couple of times, even months ago, she made these video pleas in which she said, she used the words, please do the right thing, as if she was trying to specifically talk to one person. And there was this, I got the sense that there was a belief on her part that this person had some like humanity in them and that she could reach the humanity by saying, please do the right thing. It's not too late to do the right thing. Is that the right tack to take with a ransom, a person who gives you a ransom?
Absolutely. And I'm sure that Savannah was, she was probably coached by the FBI to do that. Their attempts to humanize Nancy in the eyes of the kidnappers. In their perspective, if they still possess Nancy, they're hoping that hearing that plea will influence their future decisions with her. So absolutely, I think that that was a good move on law enforcement's part to put Savannah out there and to make those public pleas. Obviously, we're still looking for Nancy. So I think at that point, if they've already admitted that Nancy perished, they were probably right. And now they're just trying to get as far away from the investigation as they can.
So one of the things that I think is still out there is that there was some DNA, I think, brought from this crime scene that's being looked at, analyzed. And I guess they could follow, you know, those DNA, you know how they put them through, what is it, 21andMe or whatever that's
like
called.
Like the Ancestry.
Yeah, the Ancestry.com, yeah. So, and because they have cracked other cases, the Idaho murder cases they cracked like that. So do you think that's what we're maybe waiting on, that maybe they're going
it
down
very
that?
Well could be. I don't have any inside knowledge of the DNA and what they're looking at, but in today's DNA technology, that is definitely the way to go. The genetic profiling of DNA in the family trees is cracking cases left and right. And I would not be shocked to find out that that's what they're doing right now.
And just finally, I just wanted to ask you, as a law enforcement, former law enforcement officer, just give me some idea. What you I mean, you worked on the Paige Runkowski case that was not solved, the young woman who was abducted off of I-94, how many, 30 years ago, how many years ago?
Yeah.
So, and you, I mean, her mother passed away, and you worked with her until the very end. Tell
right.
me from a law enforcement perspective, before we close out, what is that, what's that like for you day in and day out?
You know, I try to keep my own perspective and not get too involved in the emotional part of it. I almost need to do that as a law enforcement officer, but that doesn't mean that I want the same unanswered questions that they want to be, you know, the case to be solved. In fact, I have held on to some of these cases even into my retirement, like still advocating for them, you know, doing podcasts for the family members to find their loved ones and find answers for them. I think really invested, especially missing persons investigators, they never really let go of these cases. And I can say that's definitely what's happened to me.
Yeah, I mean, I always say the answer is out there. It just got to find it. You know, I mean, you use in law enforcement for missing persons, you use that. I think as reporters, when we're working on stories,
yeah.
You know, we also feel that, you know, the answer's out there. We just got to figure out a way to find it. So,
and we have to continuing advocating for the family members, you know, while the colder this case gets, the less interested people are going to be, but that family is not going to stop looking for her, and we have to support them in that.
Sarah Krebs, always a pleasure to talk with you. We'll have you on again. Hopefully this case comes to a resolution and brings some peace to this family. Sarah Krebs, former Michigan State police member, also a missing person advocate and expert. Thanks again for your insight. We always appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, Marie.
We'll be back in a minute.